Welcome to Syntropic World. I hope to take you on an adventure of possibility about a world that is syntropic, where all we do as humans in universe leaves everything better. Thank you to my wonderful guests, people I admire, people who make me better. Special thanks to Foundation Nova Diem for producing this series. If you are a social enterprise seeking an avenue for digital storytelling, I cannot recommend Nova Diem enough. Now let's get started. Thank you for listening. Well, hello, everybody. I am very excited to introduce this series that will bring you into Syntropic World. And our first guest is wonderful friend, part of the advisory team of Syntropic World, someone I respect very much, Jan Hutton. I could go through her bio. It's very extensive, including roles around the world in chief marketing roles. Currently, she's a CEO in tourism. But what I really wanted to say is that my experience of Jan is someone who is incredibly clear-sighted, very strategic, very intentionally strategic, and what I would call purposefully ambitious. So purposefully ambitious is there's a real strong transmission that she has around the work that she does is towards a better world, in which we hold as very syntropic. The sort of person that you know is reliable, dependable, you know, just present. There's a real quality that I really respect. So thank you so much for being the opening guest for this series on Syntropic World, Jan. And thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Christine. I'm excited to be here today.
I believe that you have a question for me to get this started.
Yes, actually, I do. Yeah, first, just very grateful to be sharing today with you and your audience. I've got a couple of questions because you're the type of person that I think people want to just tap on the shoulder and keep asking more and more questions because I learned so much from you. But I guess the thing that intrigues me the most is you personally, as an individual, have always, I think, been a catalyst for transformative learning, probably for engagement, certainly community, bringing people together around, you know, a single purpose, which I guess is, you know, Syntropic World. But the part that I'm interested in is that you create this amazing syntropic value for people, for organizations, for Mother Nature. And it just makes so much sense. Nobody would listen to anything that is, you know, the tools and methodologies that you deliver without going, slam dunk, this is just exactly what I've been looking for. The blueprint makes sense and wanting with a real thirst to adopt and implement. So the part that I'm really curious about is, what on earth is the biggest obstacle? You know, is it mindset? Is it policy? Is it funding? Is it time? It just feels like you've created something that we know the world needs and people that are conscious know that the world needs. And then I know that you've got an incredibly successful movement. But what do you feel are the things that might be maybe holding you back, or the obstacles or the challenges, or what's the tide that you move against?
Whoa, great question. The biggest obstacle, well, first of all, we're all fish in water and we can't see the water. All of us, no matter myself included, there's a whole lot of things that I can't see. And so there's a part of that that is seeing the water that we're swimming in. And some of us know that it's not very healthy water that we're swimming in. So I'm talking about the current and existing systems and structures that have created a world where we can hold success in the hands of a handful of billionaires with more wealth than whatever else, and think it's perfectly okay for most of the world to be hungry or poor or in desperate circumstances, and think that that's a healthy world. You know, so that's just a very superficial example of the intrinsic structures that the water that we're swimming in has created. And so there's that piece first, which is to know, in another word, know the game that we're playing in. And so many people who come into Syntropic World have an intrinsic understanding of that already. And because it is this monumental beast of a, it's almost machine-like, a monumental, which is almost its own intelligence. It's its own version of a runaway artificial intelligence. Then there is the next piece around that, which is it can be overwhelming and people can have a sense of, I don't know what to do. It's too big. I don't know what to do. Where do I get started? And there can be hopelessness in that and helplessness in that. And so those are the pieces as well that can be clear obstacles for people. And then if there was any other piece, it would be the isolation that many people feel around how do we respond to that. And so it's really important. That's part of the work in Centropic World, is that this doesn't happen in solo. It happens through bringing diverse, incredible people together to co-create together and to learn from each other about how we can build new models that make the existing obsolete.
Yeah, thank you. What a fantastic answer. I think I would probably be speaking on behalf of many, many people that know your work, that work with you, that know you as a dear friend, that I feel extremely grateful just to have found you and I guess the role that you've played and Centropic World as an extension of that, which, you know, clearly represents a really profound body of work that recognizes the sacredness of life, of being alive. And I guess the part that I'm learning the most about is actually not just life and being alive, but how you actually pave a path to a better future. And yeah, I mean, I think that to suddenly find this community that you lead of proactive, energized, skilled people that are all pursuing change, in fact, driving change actively through the tools and partnerships and models that you have, is a sense of coming home. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting feeling because in many ways you are a catalyst of hope. And I guess I'm interested to know, do most people that engage your work, that spend time in the community, do they feel that sense of prodigal belonging? Do they feel this is something they've really been looking for and maybe not even knowing it?
Yeah.
Is that a common experience?
It is, actually. And it's definitely something that I work very hard to ensure happens. And one of the sort of underlying, we call it pattern integrity, that the threads that run through this work, Centropic World, that we hold as sacred itself, is that we avoid any level of exploitation of others, including ourselves, which is aspirational, but definitely an aspiration worth going for. We avoid any form of the colonizing mindset, which lives in domination and superiority and so on. And so those sort of are the backbone or the substrate of the work that we do. And so that gives people a sense of safety when they step into this. But then the other part of this that is, I don't think people are expecting, is because the tools and models that we're introducing in Centropic World are the laws of nature. I mean, the way that nature works. And so even though we've reached this place at this time where often nature is this separate thing over there that we can take from, exploit, and forget about, we forget that we are actually nature. But the nature's coordinate system, the way nature works, the way it communicates, I mean, is still beyond any technology that we've created in the physical technological world. And yet we're engaging with it all the time. And so when people, there's sort of this exhale because, oh, I get it. This is actually, I know how to respond to this because it's part of life. It's not separate from life. It's not this machine thing that goes over there that has, when you live with it or experience it, has no connection to anything that we would associate with enlivenment. And so that recognition is for many people, a surprise. But when you think about it, it should be no surprise at all.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we all need to be reminded that, you know, we are nature. And I have philosophically always said that nature is my church. I'm not sure that that is certainly not meant in any religious context, but it is the doorway to my spirituality. And I haven't often looked at nature beyond that. You know, I haven't necessarily looked at nature as something that offers, you know, patterns and methodologies to relationship, to business, to being. So yeah, it's interesting that you actually describe it like that.
Yeah, well, you know, I have to acknowledge that much of this work, I was introduced to the work of Bucky Fuller when I was in my early 20s, and it was one of those when many young people, particularly, I'm not going to speak for the generation right now, but in my generation, you know, we were ambitious. We wanted to go out and conquer the world and all of that sort of thing. So I went to a program learning how to make money, and I was introduced to the work of Buckminster Fuller. And I my life has since been more about serving a greater purpose for humans and universe than making money as a result of that. But Bucky Fuller spent his life, for anyone who is familiar with his work, he really wanted to apply nature's coordinate system to everything he did. And he spent his life demonstrating that humans have a purpose in universe. You know, there's a reason that we're here. I want to be clear that there's an individual, this is both at the individual and collective level, every life creature as well, every has this intrinsic value to contribute. And so we have this, and there is a way that we can partner with the way that nature has figured out how to work over 14 billion years. And so Bucky has been my mentor, and his thinking was really quite remarkable. And so a lot of the work that we bring into Centropic World, not all of it, but a lot of it is built off his thinking from over 60 years of his life. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, you know, I haven't had the sublime privilege of, you know, being at shoulder to shoulder with him in the way that you have, which is pretty rare. And I guess my exposure has mostly been through our conversations, but it's so soothing even listening to you. It's like every human longs for and knows that there is a purpose for us, and that we are part of something, and that we're not, you know, lost out at space individually, but connected to something. And those principles that you refer to in relationship, in business, in all ways, I think you're right. I have experienced that exhale, and I can imagine many people having that moment where, okay, this is actually how it's meant to be. This makes the world a sense. This fits. And, you know, there's that congruence between mind, heart, action, that flows.
Yeah. I've had the amazing privilege of being in one-on-one conversations over a long period of time with high-performing leaders, CEOs, executives, and so on, very intimate conversations when we're really talking about beingness, and conversations that often they've never had. So deeply intimate, deeply spiritual, deeply human. And the wonderful thing about those conversations is that they have given me such a deep knowing that most humans are good people who would love to have the opportunity to bring their whole brilliant, diverse, different selves to not just their life, but to creating something, participating in something, being a part of something that leaves the world better for their children. I don't think this is a foreign concept if we scratch below the surface of even people that we may look at in the first instance and go, oh, you know, I so don't agree with the principles that they hold. I think, you know, underneath all of that anger and rage and noise and exploitation and so on, this is a fundamental part of life. I mean, babies are born with this and then we're enculturated to do and act and behave somewhere else. And so part of my work and the work in Centropic World is how do we enable that to happen? How do we enable people to be able to come into the wholeness of their being, working with others in a way that everyone is elevated from that experience and the things that we're working on genuinely matter for the seventh generation and for our children. And I'm actually quite flummoxed that this isn't a central organizing thought behind pretty much everything that we do. It's like, you know, really, why are more people not genuinely acting in this way? Because ultimately, it really is what we want, I believe. I could be naive, but I believe that.
I think, sure, first of all, the first part of what you said there really touched me. Like, I could just feel a level of emotion when you spoke about those leaders and those conversations. You know, I have worked in a senior executive capacity for many, many years, you know, getting close to two decades, which gives away my age. And it has often not been my experience. And I somehow made a bit of a conscious choice, but I cannot tell you how it came about or even when. It was just this drip feed of courage that I was going to be different, that I wanted to show up differently, that I wanted to heal people. I don't mean that word to sound dramatic, but that's how it felt. And so I listened to you talk about the type of coaching you did with those leaders. And gosh, there is so much more of that needed. There is so, so much more of that needed. And you say that you're sometimes flummoxed about the fact that this why is this not just the central piece to our conversations, to our decision making, to our education, to the process of upbringing, and it probably goes in a whole different direction and probably not for this conversation. But, you know, I do look at so many people, and you spoke about the diversity of human emotions just now, and we did come here to experience all of them. But there is something where there is this dichotomy of longing to know and being scared to know. And there is, we distract our lives, and I've been guilty. So I don't, certainly not looking at others. I'm looking at myself when I say this, but it doesn't matter whether we distract ourselves by, you know, in a shopping center or in a church or gambling or, you know, spending money or having a drink and I'm not saying any of these things are right or wrong. This is not about that. What I'm saying is our lives are so full of the stuff that doesn't have meaning that we have mastered the art of distraction. And that keeps us locked into the systemic existing frameworks of life and the system that we're part of, that we perpetuate in this, you know, in a free fall sense where we don't ask the right questions. And many people are just on autopilot. So I guess part of the urgency, part of the evangelism of the work that you do is actually, and that's why I just love the name that you spoke about earlier, Awakenings. It's about how do we wake people up? How do we get people to think and to feel and to be conscious and to inquire? How, you know, how do we get just to that point? Because that's the trigger for it all.
Well, the other advantage of working with people, including myself, always working on myself, but working with people is a deep respect for beautiful principle that was very present in the Greek language set, which is the principle of Kairos time, K-A-I-R-O-S, Kairos time, which is kind of the clock. I call it the clock of the heavens. So Kairos time is that amazing time when synchronicities or so on happen. And almost everybody I know knows Kairos time because they've had some level of experience of it. And what I've learned through my own life as well is that going back to the unique specialness of every life is, and I want to ask you about your thread, Jan, so, but is that there is a thread through every life that may be dampened, tampered with, even to the attempt of having it like turn out, turn off. But it's the thread of literally of our animating life. And Kairos time has its way with us, often by bringing us to our knees so that we can get to the place where we go, okay, now I'm going to turn and actually live my life or take action in my life towards things that I really care about, that really matter to me. And I've facilitated that process in others so many times. I've been through it myself, dark night of the soul. Anyone that reaches our age has had more than one of those experiences, likely. We know what it feels like to be completely broken down, no matter how successful we may project our lives to be or all of that sort of stuff. We've all had those moments. And so while I would love to see more people, you know, happening earlier on so that we can gather the momentum of this movement, I really trust that our maturing humanity, and I do actually really believe that the whole of humanity is going through a maturing. It's the arrow of emergence, even though at times it can look like we're going backwards. And so, yeah, I have a deep sense of trust in that experience, that human experience, that we, even if it's on the deathbed, which it quite often is, you know, we will awaken to the things that matter most at some point in time, and then you can't go back. It's like, okay, I have to make a commitment towards the things that matter most. I really trust that, and I really trust that even pretty much at every level, you know, of human existence. Some people, it comes to them very early, and others we have to wait until we're almost done with our life for that to arrive. But anyway, I trust that. And on that matter, I was going to ask you, because you've got this incredible career, and there's definitely been a constant thread in your life. My sense of it, knowing you, is that there's this just real. It is like a flower coming into full bloom, which often happens. It happens to all of us, you know, at different ways. But, you know, what's the story, and what's the story that your life is weaving? What are those things? Are you comfortable speaking to the central threads and the things that are genuinely the things that get you up every morning and look towards the day with?
Yeah, well, that's a beautiful, profound, somewhat confronting question, and I love it. Yeah, thanks, Christine. I think I probably have numerous threads, like many people. You know, first of all, I'm very proudly American, and very much my people. I feel a deep sense of sisterhood, if that's the right word. And when I'm with them, the wisdom, warmth, sincerity, grit, bravery, and the deeper sense of community for me is profound. And that my soul really does feel docked. You know, I feel a real sense of belonging when I'm in Africa. It's hard to maybe articulate and for others to understand, but, you know, and I'm sure many people feel like this from their own respective continents, but certainly when African blood runs through your veins, it's just deep, even though it's such a conflicted country. It's definitely the Africanness of who I am. And it intersects in lots of ways. It intersects in, you know, which hopefully we touch on more. It intersects in my unbridled commitment, sometimes feisty passion towards conservation, nature, wildlife, and different projects that I've steered as a result. And the things that stir me, you know, I guess getting a little more personal than that, I somehow always felt, and I'm not going to get into politics. It's hard not to, coming from South Africa, but I always felt like I was somehow the wrong complexion, the wrong gender, the wrong orientation, the wrong education. you know, I grew up at a time where it was towards the end of apartheid. I was still a child through apartheid, probably not paying attention, being quite passive, but coming into maturity at a stage where I was profoundly affected, if not absolutely distraught by the realization of the indignity of what my people represented, you know, in the history of South Africa in apartheid era. South Africa's very male dominated, or certainly was when I was, you know, coming into my career. And then, you know, from an education perspective, I got into UCT, University of Cape Town. I was not academic, and I was actually very dyslexic. And there were radical riots. I'm talking about, you know, burnt tires in the road, a library burnt down, like lots of, like, you know, windows being knocked out, like proper riots. And I guess I slightly missed, maybe this is Kairos timing that you touched on. I feel like I kind of missed my window. And I landed up going to London and living in London for 2 years. And I came back in numerous times. I started, you know, to re-engage tertiary education. This is not in the days, by the way, where online learning was anywhere near advanced and accessible as it is now. So I think that they're shaping my identity, and I don't want to use this word because it's quite a loaded word, but in many ways there was a level of shame, a level of, you know, as I said, you know, wrong complexion, wrong gender, wrong orientation, wrong education. I just felt that, and that's been a significant part of what has forged me, because it has made me, a word you used just now that I love, it has made me profoundly committed, but way more than committed. What's the word I'm looking for? I am acutely driving what I would say is my level of transformation in areas of inclusivity and respect, and creating a real, genuine sense of lifelong learning, and realizing that I have a ferocious appetite to learn, and that, you know, maybe not everybody needs a tertiary education. I'm very envious of anybody that does, and you know, it was a chip on my shoulder for many, many years. But it drove me to want to understand life, and that started at a young age where I read everything that I've never read a novel in my entire life, but I read everything to do with the mind, to do with quantum physics, to do with basically how life works. And that has shaped me in business, in spirituality, in most areas, in all areas. So I would say my threads are around those spaces and how that has informed what I do for a living, you know, and how I've had to dig deep, actually. I've had to dig deep and believe in myself and master that, because it did not come naturally, and start to build a career where I felt like it was hard yards gaining every mile. And yeah, so you know, I've had amazing opportunities. I've worked with incredible people. I don't want to make it sound like it's been a struggle. It is not. I've lived what I think is an incredibly blessed life. But certainly those are some of the dynamics around me that have fueled who I've become and the career journey map that I've curated through my life, and not just the jobs, but way more importantly, the impact I've made in those roles. And I think it was subliminal. I never arrived in a position thinking this is what I want to do. But when I look back on every position, I can see the impact. I can see the change. I could see how different I was in how I led, in the decisions I made, in the ethos. And that again is why I think Centropic World for me is that powerful blueprint that, as you know, as we spoke to you a little while ago, that is that big exhale moment. Mm. You know, I've been doing this like a little coal out of the fire on my own.
Yeah. And
suddenly to have, you know, you, your community, the tools around me is very mobilizing. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's beautiful. I think the way that you've just described all of those threads really comes across. I talk about transmission, you know, when we really let go of all of the extraneous stuff where our voice, our beingness speaks, And we almost don't need language anymore, because the power of who we are comes through as a transmission. And there's no ambiguity in that. And there's also an incredible sense of our own personal worth, which is important. It's not arrogant, you know, it's not that. It's a very different thing. There's this, that sense of worth. And I, listening to your story and knowing that you managed to get some very significant roles, you know that that had to be present. And so part of what I love supporting through bringing people, you know, into Centropic World and their agency is that we embrace that. We embrace that in ourselves. Again, this is not arrogant. It's a very, very different. It's here I am, and I was born, and there is something I'm here to do, and it matters. And the sense of that I'm not worthy, or I'm not educated, or I'm not this, or I'm not that, which all of us have some thread of that, is a distraction to what we're here to do. And one of the things that we talk about in Centropic World is when the purpose is big enough, you know, when we have a purpose, an evolutionary purpose that's big enough, then we become unafraid to ask for what we need to have that happen, because it's bigger than ourselves. And ourselves is just the vessel vehicle to achieving that purpose. And there's an incredible liberation in that.
Mm.
That is, because it's beyond personal. And I hear that in you. You know, I hear that level of, I would want you on my team if we were going up against something, because that, you know, that when you are on my team, how lucky am I? But if we're going up against something, because yeah, that's, and for me as well, you know, that's been my own journey, embracing the values and the skills and the differences that I have, and not being apologetic about what I don't have. It's like, okay, I don't have that, but someone else does, thank goodness. And, you know, that's how we create ecologies of synergy. We're not all same, same. We're all brilliantly different. And that's where the genius comes, when that comes together. So I know that one of the things you've talked to me, which I've really loved this about travel, you mentioned in a personal conversation at some stage that this travel experience as a learning opportunity, or this exploring or going to places, experiencing cultures, how worlds open. Can you speak a little bit about that, your love of that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Look, I've been involved with travel and tourism for the longest time, because I believe that travel makes the world a better place. And there are incredible white papers out there, and you know, that talk to the role of travel and the fact that almost innate in us, and I mean literally from the time of Bartholomew Dias, like from the first people that ever traveled, and just on that, you know, we had Marco Polo in the 1200s, we had Columbus, Neil Armstrong, and now in 2031 we're looking at over 2 billion travelers. So you can understand that when I talk about this is actually something innate in us, we are all looking for a life that is not ordinary. We're all looking for the unfamiliar. And there's something amazing about the research they've done and how your brain works, which I find fascinating. And that is when you're actually in an environment where your five senses, which is really just, you know, I suppose your brain is this artifact of, you know, the data that comes in through your touch, smell, sight, all your five senses. And when these senses are short-circuited, in other words, when you are overwhelmed because everything around you is new, the sights, the smells, the textures, everything you're seeing, you're in a totally foreign environment. It actually literally short-circuits, or maybe said more, you know, articulately, it silences the critic in our minds. It silences that part of the internal narrative that is scared of the past or fearful of the future or feeling a level of anxiety or whatever it is, which many of us deal with. And suddenly we feel totally refreshed. Suddenly it literally quietens that, because all the energy is going into almost taking in the information around us. And that is why people can go away for a weekend and come back feeling totally rejuvenated. But I guess what I've learned as well is you know, we really do take ourselves with ourselves, and I know that that's an obvious comment, but there is a little quote. I'll just quickly read it to you because I love it. It says, "Genuine travel has no destination. Travelers do not go somewhere, but constantly discover that they are somewhere else. Nature does not change. It has no inside or outside. It is therefore not possible to travel through it. All travel is therefore change within the traveler. And it is for that reason that travelers are always somewhere else. To travel is to grow." And that is by James Koss. And I think that is ultimately a lot of what I've done is destination development. And that's looking at how you actually promote a place and you know, bring in forex and extra, like it's all about the visitor economy. But I've realized that the destination is one within us. And so that's shaped a lot of how I see travel. I hope that answers what you're asking.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And I'm just curious, the quote, which was amazing, you said James Koss, in the same author of Finite and Infinite Games, Koss, that's
the same
person?
Yes.
All right. Beautiful. I read his book a long time ago, and it's one of the, I guess, one of the substrate pieces as well that live in the tropic world, which is, we don't want to be playing win-lose games. That's for children's playgrounds.
Yeah.
We want to be playing the infinite game that really does support an increased well-being for Earth and all her creatures. And James Koss, there you go.
Well,
you didn't know he was a traveler.
Yeah, well, I don't know. You know, maybe the ultimate internal traveler.
Yeah.
But he speaks of how travel diminishes preconditioned prejudices, how it creates, right, you know, breaks down borders, or rather better said, it creates unity. He speaks about how travel creates creativity, how it reduces stress, or even said more profoundly, is the antithesis of war.
Yeah.
You know, and these are the concepts around which that quote was written.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful. In Centropic World, we one of the tools that I teach is actually very simple. Few people do it very well, though. Not within Centropic World, but a few people in the world do it. It's called Conversation for Understanding. And it is there's a couple of rules around it. And the first one is the intention is to understand the other. You don't have to agree with them. It's not the same thing, but to understand them, their worldview, why they chose to do what they're doing, the course of action, and so on, to genuinely understand as best as we are able the other. Therefore, if that is the intention, you can only ask questions.
Wow.
And you cannot defend or justify. And I've facilitated people through that experience many, many times, and watched with just the remarkable recognition. When people are committed to that, you have to be committed to understanding, but the remarkable recognition of all of the assumptions and cultural stories that were occupying their territory, their being, prior to sitting in that understanding conversation. And that once they go through that experience, they recognize, have the capacity, like travel, to see more of another than they gave permission to in that first cut. Mm-hmm. And I've always had the belief that if a national level, if countries were willing to understand other countries, like genuinely understand the history, understand the grief, understand how they feel this, that, or the other, that we would recognize each other across the fence.
Oh,
that's really what you're saying in the piece around travel. it opens that understanding.
Yeah, I love that. So, you know, maybe I listen to what you're saying, and because we're engaged in this conversation, I'm just, you know, fixated on the conversation. But as you're talking, I can just imagine people grabbing a pen and wanting to write down notes, because they're just these pearls. So, you know, Christine, when I when I listen to you, and as I said earlier, I'm extremely grateful for the fact that you came into my life and through that Centropic world, you have a big life. You have really big thoughts. You have really, really big goals, and you have a big spirit. And I suppose something I'd love you to share with us is just how all of that culminated into you birthing Centropic World. Like, what was the seed that germinated into this incredible global movement? Where did it all start? What's the backstory that nobody would know unless they heard it?
It was a sequence of events. And for most of my life, I honestly felt lost. I really did. I felt unworthy, lost. I had all of that sort of stuff. But like you, an incredible appetite for learning and experience. Meeting the work of Bucky in my 20s was a pivotal moment. So deeply trained in systems thinking, deeply trained in the geometry of nature, structure and geometry of nature, which actually I've translated into human geometry. Geometry is the study of relationships. And so I had the opportunity to practice the work of Bucky and so on in corporate settings. People didn't know I was doing that. But there is actually a geometric design to how we create ecologies of synergy. If anyone's been on a team and had the experience of those amazing teams that are just so greater than any individual, they can be random, but there's happenstance. But there is actually a way that we can design them and create them. And so I was really fascinated with the human relational dynamic. As you mentioned in the sort of opening, I've always been a convener of events and things. And I had this horrible experience over many years of convening brilliant, beautiful, able people into around an idea and having it fall into a messy human heap where it became about egos. There was such a loss in that. There was a loss of the investment of each other's energy. There was a loss in the idea, and it just became ugly. And so I've been fascinated in how to do that and how to do that elegantly. And then at my own level, because it's interior development as well, those conversations, as I said, mentioned that I've had with other people that have really affirmed this desire for humans to exist in those ecologies, first and foremost, the recognition that they're trapped in this system and they don't know what to do and they've invested their life into it and they've got kids' education to worry about and what do we do and all of that sort of thing. So that, and then, where Centropic World really started to be birthed was when I created an event on the Gold Coast, which is where you and I both live. And this was one of those things that was inspired from the question, I don't want to be the person on the couch complaining, but what do I do? And I sat in that question, what do I do at a citizen community level? And I sat in that question for a couple of years. And when the idea for Big Blue Sky came to me, which was to bring together multi-stakeholders of the city to co-create the future of the city, I knew that we had to do it differently because we were bringing people together. So it couldn't be another messy human heap. And so all of the sort of foundational tools of Centropic World were born out of what I introduced into Big Blue Sky, the Trust Manifesto, the Synergistic Audit, how we bring people together. And it was a clear transmission. So I managed to pull together a team of about 12 volunteers. We were all volunteers. None of us knew each other prior to that. So we're all strangers to each other. And over the course of 6 months, we co-created a world-class event without a single human upset and no job description. And it was literally like watching if you went into a town square and had a stack of instruments and you managed to pull together people who played them, that they would sit down without rehearsal and play a symphony. It was this gorgeous calibration and coherence of people coming around a central purpose that they cared about and being given the agency to be brilliant to create this event. And it was one of the most beautiful experiences that I had. And then, of course, because it was actually challenging incumbency And because I didn't have a coach in my corner, I didn't have someone who had public experience. This was my first public role. This idea was attacked, and it injured me at such a deep level because I couldn't understand how anyone could attack something so genuinely beautiful and so genuinely created by a group of people that were not there to serve themselves and their own heroic adventure. It was this service thing. And Jan, I disappeared. It was so hard for me to reconcile. I took it personally. I shouldn't have taken it personally. If I had had a coach in my corner, they would have said, this is going to happen. When it happens, you should go, bravo, keep going, you're on track. But I didn't have that. And so I went into a very, very, very dark place. And the decision that I made coming out of that was that, I'm at the latter end of my life. And things become more defined at that stage, because you realize that there is a clock ticking. And I just made a decision that I was going to dedicate myself to building the new models that make the existing obsolete, creating ecologies for synergy, communities where people can bring their brilliant selves, really committed to this work. And so, that was sort of the pathway, all of those pieces. And at the same time, it has given me a sense of, after many years, because I started Syntropic World when I was 58. So, late to the party, but this is my work. And this is, I'm every single step of the way along, every single broken bone, kick in the guts, trembling, terror, joy, every step along the way has been 100% the material required to get to this place.
Oh, gosh. Wow. You use the words, or you ask the question, or you provoke the response when talking about your work, and you often say, that there is a question to be asked that is, do you care enough?
Mm-hmm.
It's a visceral question, because it really does demand sincerity and evidence. And I find it really interesting that when you say, do you care enough? And what I guess one of the things I wanted to maybe ask you to expand on is, you said in a conversation we had before that, we ultimately, as humans, we all want the same thing. We all want to experience, to be seen, to experience joy and beauty and opportunity, and to feel valued, and to have a sense of meaning, and whatever else, to feel loved. And that's cross-cultural. And I suppose in many ways, as a result, you've created a business that is global. And correct me if I'm wrong, but you've reached so many, many people who feel like I do, across over 30 countries, if I'm correct.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to just ask, how do you go about sharing access to your business? Because I know you've got a really unique approach and model that goes way beyond just the normal commercials that a business would have. It's almost as if the entry ticket, the entry criteria are, do you care enough? And if that response mm-hmm. is unequivocally yes, you seem to hold hands pretty quickly. So do you want to expand on that a little?
Yeah. And so a piece of this is that I was a single mum, largely unsupported for most of my life. And I was raised in a very traditional sort of liberal family, where the thinking was that anyone who was on welfare of any level was a lazy person. Well, of course, Kyra's timing had a different experience for me. So as a single mum, I was, for many years, I was in a very precarious state, and I didn't have access to many of the things that I wanted to. So I learnt to be a community oriented, genuinely caring for accessibility for people through my heartfelt way. And so with Syntropic World, we pretty much are breaking every rule, hopefully, because that's part of what we're doing. So one of the things that we do in any of the classes that we have is we offer it in, at the moment, in four currencies. Currency use is a form of exploitation. We need to name that. And so the different levels of currency. And so we offer it in four different currencies, first and foremost. One of them is the Australian currency, which compared to the UK pound and the euro and the US dollar is almost half the money. So people can choose. I don't put a gate around that at all. If you're from the UK, you can pay in Australian dollars. If you can't pay or you can't pay the full fee, I'm never going to deny someone access, because it's really important for me that people in communities who would never have access, and we have people from Uganda and Kenya and other places, but even from Australia who are, would, like I had when I was, you know, the single parent, would never have had access. We have a process where they can apply for a scholarship, and It's not a free pass. People, there's a commitment. And I believe in this fiercely, because that's part of what we do in Centropic World. To be part of Centropic World, we're agreeing to be part of the community. We're agreeing about how we behave with each other. We're agreeing that we treat each other with respect. We're agreeing that we hold each other to our best. We're agreeing to a set of principles about how we are human together. And if people don't like that, that's fine. You just can't participate. So if you want to be part of, if you want to take one of the classes and you don't have the financial means, then you're invited to commit to bringing the qualities and so on of yourself, including that you're going to attend, that you're going to respect the process, that you're going to participate and so on. And anyone who does that is given access. And so essentially on one level, those that have a part, one of the many tools that we have is the synergistic audit, which is how we honor value in six domains of input and six domains of output. There are some people have an abundance of money and they want community and connection. There are other people that have no money and they have brilliance. We need to register that those are relevant. You know, there are people who are just the carers of the world. They'll be thoughtful and weave connections and so on. We need to start honoring those things as of equal value to if you have the money. And so, because the moment we give money primacy over any other value, we get the world that we've got. And so it is this beautiful way of inviting people to bring what they have, that they have the willingness to bring to what we're doing, that can be held in the same respect as someone who pays the full fee.
Yeah. I think anybody would say that that's pretty rare. And certainly you walk the talk, which is amazing. There's a well-known African proverb, which is not entirely aligned, but I just want to say it because I see again, everything that you're discussing in terms of genuine community and how you do kind of link arms and not just through some payment mechanism. You know, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together.
Yeah.
And that go far and allowing people to participate and opening up and welcoming people into your community through various currencies. And I don't mean that just in the sense of monetary currency, but commitment and air, you know. So that's really remarkable.
Yeah. And so just to sort of complete that, Gandhi had a quote that many people know, which is be the change we want to see in the world. I believe that was Gandhi. In Centropic World, we're taking that to the next level. It's not just the interior. Yes, we need to be the change we want to see in the world. Everything that we do, how we design our businesses, the legal coding, how we account for value, everything that we do needs to demonstrate the change that we're working on for the world with the future. So in other words, let's be the model rather than it's out there. We need to demonstrate that. And so that means looking at And please hear me, this is not about perfection, and Syntropic World is far from perfection, but this is our ardent aim, is looking at everything that we do, every way we do it, as a demonstration of the world that we're holding as possible, everything. And so it's not just us being the change. It's we need to demonstrate it in all things.
And that is what is delivered, is, and that has been my experience and my story. And that is why even speaking with you today is such a privilege, because I previously felt like the change I wanted to bring was impossible. And working with you and Syntropic World, it feels within reach. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a very, very significant realization. That's all I can say. And one that I'm very, very grateful for.
Well, likewise, the gratitude is both ways, because you have the strategic and so on things that, as I said, you know, I'm not what I'm good at, but you have the strategic and that beautiful, intentional, purposeful ambition and direction and experience that I lack. And I am so grateful to have you on my team. So thank you as well, Jane, for being here. And thank you for this wonderful conversation and being part of this podcast series.
I've loved every minute. Thank you.
This episode is produced by Foundation Nova Diem. We thank them for their wonderful production. If you are curious to learn more about Syntropic World, then please visit syntropic.world and sign up for our weekly Sunday Syntropy, where you will receive articles, tools, and resources to support your Syntropic journey. You can also find us on all the socials at Syntropic World. We love questions. Please ask. You can email us at hello@syntropic.world. Let's leave everything better and be Syntropic. Thank you for listening.